So this gift of the water, of the bread of life, what? This is a gift of God in man, who gives you free. All gifts of God are free. And this is also a gift from Master, the God in him, to the disciple, which has the power to enliven the life in him, you see. Guru Nanak defines who is a dead man and who is really alive. And he says, only he is alive, O Nanak, in which God has become the enlivening power of the soul. The soul that has become the mouthpiece of God, are the switch which is connected with the powerhouse, that electricity of the powerhouse is working through him, is in tune, in contact with them. So unless we have that contact by receptivity, we cannot bear forth much fruit. You can remain a religious man. You can have all scriptures by heart. You can have all the world literature stuffed in your brains. Well, just like so many libraries are there. They all give reference to this thing. But this thing you can have only by living up to what the Master says, the first thing, and the second is by developing receptivity. His words should abide in you, that's the first thing, and you should abide in him. Only then you will have this gift of bread of life and the water of life. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered. That is, he is dead. You see, the same words, Guru Nanak says the same word he is saying. When a branch is cut off from the tree, naturally that withers and dries up and used for firewood. And men gather them and cast them into the fire and they are burned. This is what is meant in the biblical literature, that soul dies. Actually it does not die, but it becomes withered, you see. That is cut off from the Lord, from the God in him. If he abide in me again, he says, if ye abide in me and my words abide in you, you shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. And ask anything you want. In all things, see, you ask and it shall be given unto you. You knock, it shall be opened unto you. Only then, when you come in contact with any, first of all, there will be no desire left. Upanishads tell us, what is that by knowing which? Nothing more left to be known. So he says, then first of all you will never have any desire whatsoever. If at all any does strike you, there arises you, that will fulfill the desire. Herein is my Father glorified, and ye bear much fruit, so shall ye be my disciples. Such like disciples can have the water of life and the bread of life. As the Father now, he goes further. How to develop this receptivity? Then he says, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you, continue ye in my love. In love only, you see, you remember somebody. What is love? For whom you have got love, he is constantly in your heart. Always. You may not be expressing in words, but you are something dragging you from within. That constant remembrance is there. And in which the heart, in which such a state, develops, how can in that heart, other than him whom he loves, abide there? If at all anybody is remembered only for the sake of whom he loves, you see. So if we love God, we love the others for the sake that God is in him, not for the level of forgetting him and loving something else. So he says, if ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love. How to abide in his love, you see? Well, keep up the commandments you are given. What does he say? He says, don't think evil of others. Even in mind, word and deed, you must be truthful. Never tell lies, never conceal, don't use up others' rights. Don't say sarcasms, have something else in your mind and something else in your mouth. You say something now, and behind you say something else. Be true to your own self. You can deceive others, but not the God in you. So what I always impress is to be true to one's own self. So this is what requires, or love requires, you see. Then what are his commandments? Be chaste in word, thought and deeds. Live up to what the scriptures say. Scripture, those who are married, scriptures say marriage means taking up a companion in life to be with you in weal or woe, and both help each other to know God. That's the highest aim of a man's life. Getting children might be one duty, not 100% duty. And about it says, ye love thy wife as Christ loved the church. So he wants all of us to keep up to his commandments. And what he says, love God with all my heart, with all my strength, with all my mind, and love thy neighbor. Other masters say, God, love thy God and love all creation. There is no place where God is not. So love is the thing through which you can have the sweet remembrance and the constant remembrance. You dream of him, you see. And when you go into a very fast sleep, you reverberate without knowing, you see, the same things will be coming out of your mouth. He says, if ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love. That will give you more love from day to day. Even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. He says, follow me. I live up to the promise of my Father, and similarly you love, abide by the commandments of the God in me, of the Father in me, he says. So these things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and your joy might be full. This is how you have pleasure of the Master. When you just live, take the example of there are so many sons. A man has got 3-4 sons. One man just lives according to the commandments of the Father, never disobeys. He simply follows what his intentions are. Others obey only when they are told, or even that willingly, not willing. Kundalini, and Samudra do not away. Sri Krishna will be the best of all. Those who read the intentions of the Father and without saying, without any inclination given, he lives up to that. After every son knows what his father wants. Every disciple knows what his master wants. Should he repeat every time, every day that very lesson? Wise man is one who hears the word of the master and keeps up in his heart of hearts and lives up to it. If you do that, you will win the pleasure of the master. And what will master do? When father, excuse me, leaves the body, what does he do? He gives the keys of the whole thing to the son who is obedient, who lives up to his commandments. So this is what Guru Nanak says, for the purpose of having the water of life, or the bread of life for which you have come into this world, is in the hands of the master. Go to him, remain where you are, never mind, by living a religious way of living, that would prepare the ground, you see, when you surrender your whole self to the master. That is why Christ and all of the mother say, master say, leave all and follow me. What does he mean, you see? By following him means not to leave homes and everybody should leave and follow him, you see. Where, excuse me, where he will give them accommodation to live. To follow means to surrender their will, you see, according to his wishes, not as a slave, mind that, but as a friend. You find this thing further, I just open it. This is my commandment, that ye have one, love one another as I have loved you. And further what he says, greater love hath no man than this, that a man may lay down his life for his friends. Love knows service and sacrifice. Ye are my friends. If you do whatsoever I command you, you see, henceforth I call you not servants, for the servants knoweth not what his Lord doth do it. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known to you. So when our masters come, they don't want to make a slave of you, they address you as friends, so that you may know what he says. A friend can know a friend better. A slave cannot know a friend. So whenever masters come, they do not make a slave of you, but they give you equal rights. They say, I am a man like you. Here are my words. Abide with them. You abide in them, you abide in me. So this is how this receptivity developed, by living up to what the masters say, and also by developing receptivity and abiding in the master. He takes you as equal, as friends. So for that, what is required? So you have known what is meant by the water of life, or the bread of life. How can you partake of it? Only by developing receptivity. As you think, so you become. When he is Word made flesh, then word will come in you. You read that word is in you, see, not the flesh of the body. So these are some things which are given in the form of parables to make you understand what is what. And for that thing is required, you see, the pure lives. Unless you live up to what he says, unless you abide by the words what he utters, you see, and you live up to them, you cannot have first step. Then the second step you can have only when you learn to abide in him. So for that, what is required now? You saw the whole curtain is the mind between us and God. Soul is of the same nature as that of God, but soul is under the control of mind. And mind is under, led away through the outgoing faculties to the outside things, and we are given up to the pleasures of the outside. So unless mind is stilled, you cannot have this bliss of life. You find in the scriptures, they say, be still physically and in mind and intellectually. If you do that and know that we are God, you find that's the curtain between me, between us and the God. One saint says, if you have a mind to know God, you have made up resolute will to know God, then just put one step on your mind, that is still it, and the next step that you will take, that will enter the house of your Father. So mind is the, what a curtain or the impediment lying between man and God. Now how to withdraw mind from outside? Every time outside things, the outgoing faculties, eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin, these are five organs of sense through which five senses work: sight, audition, smell, taste and touch. Always we get impressions from outside. The subconscious reservoir of our mind is overflowing with the impressions we receive from outside. We see dreams of that very thing. We reverberate unknowingly those very things which are overflowing within us. So how to withdraw mind from the outgoing faculties? If you know that is only by stilling it. And to still the mind there are ways and ways and many ways. We have been seeking so far God in outside things. Kingdom of God cannot be had by observation. It is within you. So long as you are engaged with the pursuits which relate to the outgoing faculties, you cannot find it. It is only by liberating the soul and analyzing the soul from mind and withdrawing mind from the outgoing faculties that you can know who you are, what you are. You can come in contact with that. This elixir of life or the water of life is already within us, and the retarding factor is only mind. If mind just is directed to the outgoing faculties, we become worldly. If mind is directed to the soul above, we become spiritual. So this is what we have to learn in the on the way to God. God is the very soul of our souls. God is the very power that is controlling us in the body. If you have mind, you will find that one thing I tell you. In this natural way, if you are sitting in a absorbed state, your attention is just absorbed in something, your outgoing faculties do not work. Because the attention, which is the expression of the soul in the body, is engaged in something. Engrossed, absorbed. So the faculties have strength from the attention when they are that is attached with the senses. And similarly, mind also gains abstain from the soul. When you are absorbed, even you will find your mind doesn't work. You go into your reverie. So mind is the only thing standing in our way back to God. The Master says, "O mind, be still." You would like to have a draught of the water of life. That you would have, what is that water of life? As I told you, God is light. And God is sound principle. That you come in contact when you are still mentally and physically. So that is the thing. It is already within us. Like the parasitical plant, it is covered on a certain part of the tree, that portion on which it is spread, that becomes dry. That parasitical plant derives all the life from the branch of the tree on which it is spread. Similarly, mind takes strength from the soul and has that soul covered up. We are not able to see God. So Master tells us what to do. Just control your mind. Then he says, what to help you on the way. He says, just leave out all infirmities. All whatever shortcomings you have got. In the way of violence, hatred, and lies, and other passions. If you do that, do what are good. There are five things. There's hatred. By have what you have love. If you have got anger, have what you have forgiveness. If you are impure, lusty, have what you have chastity. So these are the things you adopt, those good things, and flee off these things. Zoroaster was asked by people, what should they do? He said, join the army of God. And he was asked, what is the qualification required? And he said, righteousness. And he asked, what is righteousness? And he defined good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. So ethical life is the stepping stone to spirituality. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. We live up to the virtues and leave all vices. That will help us to just control your mind for a while. And whatever wrong you have done, repent. Wash away with the tears of your eyes of repentance. This is the way prescribed by all masters who came in the past. We shall live up to them. So, generally you will find we have got full of passions, greed. What else? You will find lies, deceptions, usurping other rights. Well, not just thoughts, thinking evil of others. All the time, all these things go to fill in this cabin of the man body with all filth, with all dirt. How can you expect a king to enter a place, a cabin, which is full of dirt and filth? So that is why I always say, what you do, you just have the pure hearts. Well, if you get your bodies clean, you wash it from outside, then all right, cleanliness is next to godliness. If within you lies all the filth and the bad odor. We should also cleanse the body within too. So this is what all masters say. They say, Kavi say, if a fish, even if that enters the most sacred river, Ganges, even that by living in that water, that cannot leave off bad odor. So it is not the cleanliness of the body outside, but cleanliness of the heart within. And that is the way that I now lay before you to get this inner veil, you see. That, you see, bodily we have just, used toilet plus millions of dollars every year. But that's not the outer purity that, draw the attention of God, but the inner one. He is after finding out any holy place, any heart full of love, full of His thought. But our hearts are full with worldly thoughts. We're thinking evil of others by usurping others' rights, squeezing others' blood, by lusty thoughts, hatred, and so on. So we must keep our hearts pure. So for that reason, what have we to do now? That is what I just read out from Bible. You should become Guru Mukh. Guru Mukh word means to be always keeping your master before you. When he initiates you, gives a little experience of the water of life and the bread of life, the very moment he resides with you and never leaves you, that is the Christ power in him. The God power and the Guru power which never dies. He never leaves you. I said, I shall never leave you till the end of the world. And all masters say, it is the God in him, in that the Son of Man. That is the true master, that when that takes care of somebody, well, never leaves him until he takes him to the feet of the Father. So he says, for that what you should do, you just come in contact with God and be always directed like the needle of the compass towards north. Always thinking of the grace of the Master. As you think, so you become. As I told you, what is the Master? It is the God in him manifest. That is the Master. And we have evolved for that human pole at which that power was. But all the same, you will find all masters differentiating these things, the Son of Man and the Christ in Man. So, what to do then? When you live up to him, what he says, live up to him. And you will find the truth which is clothed in light, the truth which is the symphonies of the music of all harmonies, which is the outer aspect of the God in action power, which is called Word, and Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. This is the way, whether you live in one religion or the other, that makes no difference. Remain. Man is social. He must remain in some social body. But while remaining in social body, you will make their good actions. You will have reactions of the good. But to know God, to have the water of life and the bread of life, which will quench your thirst forever and appease your hunger forever, that is coming in contact with the God power, which is light and sound principle, which you have as a gift from the Master. And we must live up to what he says. This is today's subject. I think that will do if you live up. The masters never come to break one religion and start new. The same truth is already there. Just live up to them. If you live up to them, everything is all right. what is the music of life gives us, and what, I say, this light, etc., we can see or not, can we come in contact with that, what do we need, and how can we have contact with that, that will probably subject tomorrow's talk. Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to the Satsang from Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the last 30 minutes of Master's talk called Readings from St. John, which was given on December 13, 1963, in Harmony Grove, California. Our reader this evening is Sheila Gilmore.
Good evening, everyone. The last time I read, I had begun a talk in the July 71 Satsang Desh called The Destiny of a Gurumukh. I'm starting where I left off on page 3, which is the second page. Why does God manifest himself in the human poll? Because man's teacher must be a man. For men can only be taught the truth by one in the same form. Apart from the work of returning the lost souls to their source through joining them back to God, the masters have no other purpose in the world. They have no social interest, no political pursuits. Their attention is centered on spiritual matters. All other events are side issues. Man has got a body. He has got intellect and a soul. Or rather, he has not got a soul. He is a soul. That which we call the soul is an all-conscious entity. You may develop the body and intellect, but as you are the soul itself, then develop spiritually also. With very little effort, one can become a tower of physical strength, or an intellectual giant capable of discovering amazing new inventions. It is well to feed the body and the intellect, but what food have we given to the all-conscious soul? We go on believing God to be all wisdom, all light, all life, all love, but where is he? To try and clarify the problem, he has been given various names to help the people to understand. We should respect all those names which represent the Lord. I surrender myself joyfully to all thy names. But it is not a question of names, it is the named with whom we are concerned. We must grasp that which all the names signify. When a true master comes, he shows us that one thing which the whole world worships by different names. He doesn't say God is all light. He says, this is the light, his reflection. He explains that although it is true there is no place without this light, yet it must be first seen in this body, the very temple of God. How is it that a master can see the Lord and we cannot? Because in us, the mind is blocking our sight. We have four phases, chit, manas, buddhi, and ahankar, which is subconscious, mind, intellect, and ego. And we cannot see the Lord until all these are stilled. Although the atmosphere is seething with animate life, yet a man of ordinary intelligence will hesitate to believe this, for he cannot see that life with the naked eye. The masters say that one should definitely not believe unless one has seen for oneself. As long as I do not see with my own eyes, I cannot believe even the guru's words. If a man makes a statement, he should be prepared to prove it. Whoever declares that there are certain microbes in the air, he should be able to show them to others. And through the aid of the microscope, as you know, this has been made possible. Those tiny microscopic beings have always been there, and yet seeing is believing. So when an enlightened person says, there is God and he is light and he resides in each and every being and he is our life sustainer, then you will know that he is truly enlightened if he can show you this very same light within you. We close our eyes and insist that there is nothing there, but he who can see something can show it to others. In the company of the saint, the Lord was seen within. Then the name of God was sweeter. In this way, Simran becomes accurate, and the sweeter becomes our worship. You can remember this. When you begin to savor some delightful sweetness in the name of the Lord, you will know that it is the first step to your permanent spiritual marriage. If we take his name by force, there will be no nectar, for only that can be enjoyed, which can actually be tasted. Without seeing, without the turmoil of the search, how can one gain by mere repetition? Empty words are full of nothing. If we take his name by force, there will be no nectar, for only that can be enjoyed which can actually be tasted. Without seeing, without the turmoil of the search, how can one gain by mere repetition? Empty words are full of nothing. But if, for example, we have once tasted a sweet mango, then at the briefest mention of the word, the sweetness of the fruit will come to mind. And so it will be if a certain someone gives you a taste of the nectar of the Lord. Then you can call him by any name you like. Each will be as sweet as the other. The Guru gives a contact with that permeating power of God. Through the Guru's blessing, God takes up residence within us. Someone may get the true fruit. If, through some enlightened soul, the Lord becomes apparent to you, then you will begin to enjoy the intoxication of God. Without any doubt, you will know that God is there. The rishis, munis, mahatmas, all the sages who have come, have said that there is the power of God in the world. Even atheists have agreed to this and say, O mighty atom. However, the difference is that on one hand, God's praises are sung by one who sees him, and on the other, his praises are sung through books or by hearsay only. One who sees the Lord will be able to give a demonstration, and he is usually called a sadhu, sant, mahatma, guru, etc. The very meaning of the word guru is to bring light in the darkness, the dispeller of the darkness. Naturally, he will also be qualified to give the right interpretation of the scriptures, which otherwise are explained in various ways by different persons. We are all born as human beings with the same God-given privileges. Where does God reside? In the house he himself has made in the womb of the mother. But the key of this house is given to the guru. How can we get the key? To whom takes the guru's words, in truth will he open up the secret. The guru then reveals the mystery of life. The true master has ever been in existence. They came in the past. Even now the world is not without them, and they will come in the future. After all, each and every one is God's child, and He extends His unshakable constant law of demand and supply. Wherever a fire is lit, oxygen will come to help its blaze. When the people, through outer impressions, become suffocated in their own narrow-mindedness and see only that in which they are wrapped, forgetting themselves and their innate royal nature, then the Master comes to revive them, to awaken them from slumber, and to pour life-giving water upon the arid desert. Awake, awake! While you slumber, the play is running to its end. A greater part of life has already been exhausted. Very little is left. Maybe 10, 20, 30 years. Have you realized the Lord? Those who came in contact with the Master unraveled the mystery and made their lives brilliantly successful. But when masters leave the world, schools or colleges are formed, which we call religions, to keep their teachings alive. Furthermore, each school was labeled separately, and so we now have Hinduism, Islam, Sikhism, Christianity, Buddhism, and various others. Does the Lord Himself brand each being with a certain religious mark when sending him into the world? In the Lord's eyes, all are just His children, but man has segregated himself from his fellow beings. While the living Master remained on earth, many received the benefit of His presence. But when He left, the loss of His life-giving radiation resulted in stagnation and deterioration of the schools of thought. The same good old custom corrupts itself, and then the Master must come again to reawaken the souls. Oh, brothers, you are living in forgetfulness. We are all one as man. We all have this golden opportunity to make the most of our human life. Everyone has the same chance. So we should get the realization now, or again we shall have to go through the never-ending cycle. All masters emphasize that now is thy turn to meet God. Now you have this form, it is thy turn to meet God. All outer work is valueless. Gain the company of some sadhu and repeat only the Nam. Keep the company of Him who is Word made flesh, in whom God is manifested, for He will give you a demonstration of spirituality which can be increased day by day. Outer teachings, which we call apravidya, are helpful, but one should not accept them blindly. Investigate the reasons why certain rites are performed, why the lamps are lighted and bells are rung, and so on. If you continue your inquiries until you find some real information, your time will be well spent. To blindly perform rituals may yield a little peace of mind, but they offer nothing valid. No matter what we do, unless we increase in awakenedness, it will amount to little. Learn to differentiate. Inherit the truth and make the best use of the untruth. Go to one who is fully awake, who has full powers of differentiation. You may call him by any name. Some say Guru or Sant or Mahapurush or Satpurush. Although all are men, yet Mahapurush is one who is awakened, a true man. Satpurush is he who becomes one with the truth itself. We are all Purush, or conscious beings, and we are all fortunate to have been given the human form. It is a grand opportunity to realize the Lord. Aparavidya is a term which categorizes the outer practices, repetition of names, austerities, prayers, devotional rituals and customs, pilgrimage, alms and donations, scripture study, songs of praise, etc. They are all connected with the mind and the senses. We will gain reward from these good actions, but in doing them, one's doership remains. And as long as we regard ourselves as the doers, we shall continue to revolve around this interminable cycle of birth and death. While the ego remains, both good and bad actions are binding. As Lord Krishna said, like gold and iron shackles. What is the basic cause of all this? Desire. The 10th guru says that one should be desireless. Lord Buddha said the same. If there is no disturbance in a pool of water, one can see one's reflection in its limpid surface. But the eyehood cannot be cast aside until one sees that some higher power is doing everything. Such knowledge reveals one to be but a mere puppet in the hand of God. Whatever words come from God are given out in knowledge. We also have, Nanak speaks only of that which he has ordered. And so, the cure is, become the seer and see the Lord at work in everything. Paravidya is to connect the soul with the truth. Ego and attachment are consumed by the fire of Shabad. Gurumukh gets the everlasting light. This Shabad can only be received from the Guru. There is Ashabd, which is the wordless God, but when he expressed himself, that expression is called Shabad, or word. Through the Shabd, creation came into being, and through the Shabd, dissolution occurs. Creation, dissolution, and again creation. It all happens by the power of the Shabad. And where is the Shabad? Shabad is the earth, Shabad the sky. Through the Shabad the light came. Creation came after the Shabad. O Nanak, the Shabad is in every being. Shabad is also known as Nam. So we have Nam is the nectar of life. It is the name of God. And in this body does it reside. When can you see it? When the senses are controlled, the mind is at a standstill, and intellect is calm, then the soul perceives in crystal clearness. It is the first stage of realizing the Lord. Self-knowledge precedes God-knowledge. So when one knows who one is by rising above the senses, one then realizes why it is said that self-knowledge is God-knowledge. Great is man. We are all micro-gods. But unfortunately, we have forgotten our lofty heritage by remaining under the influence of mind and senses and identifying ourselves with the body and the outside world. To secure release from this illusory state, it would be useless to seek assistance from one who also is stuck fast in illusion. We must find someone who has become free, one who sees the whole of existence in true perspective. Only when he is dragged out can man be released. Think of an overburdened donkey who gets stuck in the mud or quicksand. With such a load, it's impossible for him to get free. his merciful rescuer will first unload him and then drag him out. So we should remember that on our heads rest the karmic loads of age upon age. And as long as that burden is not lifted and our attention pulled upward, we will not see the truth. Anyone can call himself a sant or guru. In name only, this is very easy. But to be such a personage in reality, why, just thinking about the tremendous responsibility he carries, the soul shivers in fright. Be grateful to the Maker who gave you this human birth, wherein you can realize him. It is thy turn to meet him through the silence of the heart, through rising above all faculties. If a true personality resides in the world, can one meet him? Christ once asked his disciples, "Whom do men say that I am?" And they told him that some said he was John the Baptist, others said Elijah, and others said he was one of the prophets. Jesus then said, "But whom say ye that I am?" And Simon Peter answered him, saying, "Thou art the Christ." So it is a question of opening the inner eye. A true Mahatma may seem as an atheist to some people, and to others like God himself. Those whose inner eye is not open are really atheists in the true sense of the word. Such people have ever persecuted the masters. Just see how they thrust a crown of thorns on Christ's brow. Guru Nanak was forbidden to enter the city of Kasur, for they accused him of corrupting the minds of the people. Paltu Sahib was burned alive, and Guru Arjan was made to sit on a red-hot plate. Shams Tabriz, a Muslim saint, was skinned alive. Mansur al-Halaj was put on the stake. Then, when these great souls leave, people start worshipping the places they frequented. While living, the fathers were scorned. After death, they are worshipped. So, God's song is the company of the sadhu. This is the highest karma. The outer sacred songs can be sung anywhere by any person. But the true song of God can only be sung in the company of a saint. When you transcend the five elements, you contact the five-sounded Shabad. Of all the karmas we have got accounted against our names, this is the highest reward. Nanak says he receives this gift as dues from past life. If God showers his mercy, we get the most valuable gift. Now I will take one hymn. Listen carefully and try to understand. When the whole of the Bhagavad Gita was revealed to Arjuna, Lord Krishna asked him, "Have you listened to all this? If so, how much have you truly understood?" And then to fully understand is also not enough. One must go on to realization. He who is fully realized is a Satguru or Satpurush. He is the Word made flesh that St. John spoke of. Christ himself said, "Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood hath eternal life." People have forgotten the true meaning of these words, that the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. He was the bread and water of life. You dear ones who have come from faraway lands, I have great love for you in my heart. We have come here to learn the truth, and whatever comes forth, I speak. The God power or Christ power under whose care you are taken is in you and shall never leave you. That remains forever. Service to a Satguru is the highest destiny. You are constantly in contact with the truth. This is a hymn of Guru Amar Das Ji, and he is saying that there is no greater good fortune than the opportunity to serve a Satguru. What is a Satguru? He who knows the Satpurush is a Satguru. His company brings salvation. O Nanak, sing the praises of God. Complete freedom is gained through keeping the company of one who has come to know the Lord Himself. Seeing the Satguru and taking his initiation, he gained the inner knowledge and full awareness. What is initiation? It means to bring out that which is hidden in full revelation. The Satguru is the image of truth. He has released his soul from the mind and senses and has become the mouthpiece of God. He who is asleep cannot awaken another. Everyone is sleeping at the level of mind and senses. All are lost in illusion and need the help of one who is free. How many people remember God for His sake alone? We want Him to fulfill our worldly desires, or we hope for happiness in the afterlife. He resides in each being, and when He sees that a child cannot live without Him, then He makes the meeting with the Satguru possible, He in whom He has Himself manifested. There should be no guile in the heart. One should have a true desire to serve and sincere humility, and then the Guru Himself will come and meet him. The Guru appears when the disciple is ready, and greatly fortunate are those who have contacted God within during their lifetime. What does service to Satguru mean? Mere lip service, saying Ram, Ram, or merely putting one's head on his feet, is no service. It is a mockery. But he who takes his guru as the ever-present power of God within him, lives in awe of that, and knows that power has constant observation over all his thought and action, will he ever sin? Furthermore, he will hold heartfelt respect for his Satguru's words. Satguru's words. Words are the Satguru. This kind of devoted service will achieve salvation. Christ says, "If ye love me, keep my commandments." It is the Satguru's wish that we make our lives pure and good. We should never squeeze the blood of other beings or cheat our fellow out of his share. Man should be of use to man. Truly speaking, a real man is one whose life is a service to others. If you love God, is not God everywhere? We are all brothers and sisters in God. How can you say you love the Master and hate your brother? The cure to many problems of this world is a sweet tongue imbued with humility. Even if you follow the Satguru, yet have not served him, you will not get the full benefit of his company. If you obey the Satguru 100%, then you will realize what God is. God is man minus desire. Man is God plus desire. If one can become desireless through the silence of the heart, that very silence will sprout forth into love. The same silence will become vocal. Many are fortunate enough to come to a master, but they serve him half-heartedly, with 5, 10, or 20% sincerity. You will rarely find one who serves 100%. After 70 or more years searching, Guru Amar Das received the priceless gift at the feet of Guru Angad, who removed the veil of illusion from his eyes and revealed the truth unto him. He who is true, know him to be the truth. All right, I will stop there and pick it up again the next time I read. I was reading from the July 1971 Satsang Desh, the Master's Talk, called The Destiny of a Gurumukh. Thank you, Master, for coming to us in this life, and thank you for taking us with you.
And thank you, Sheila, for reading for us. There were 55 people at this evening's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So, Lord Master, they say the same thing, and that power never leaves us. That is called Christ power, God power, or Guru power, or Master power. That never leaves us till the end of the world.